This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We've got a full show in store for you today. A lot to discuss on Monday. We saw the Michigan game over the weekend. We saw, well, we were disappointed with the Detroit Lions and how they played over the weekend. And Michigan State lost a heartbreaking game on Friday, the basketball team. So it's been a long weekend and a lot of sports to discuss. And let's bring in our first guest who can discuss all those things, Rico Beard. Rico, how you doing, buddy?
Good, how are we doing?
Okay. Yeah, we had a tough weekend around here. You know, at least Michigan State won in hockey, and they lost a close basketball game, unfortunately, and then they got another one tomorrow night. So how do you...
Yeah, I don't know. I know Tom keeps saying every year he's going to stop scheduling these games, but my suggestion is if you're going to schedule them, you got to start winning them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. You're going to have to start winning sooner or later down the line. You have to, or, well, you definitely got to win them at the end of the year, but yeah, you need to start out, get out on a good foot, that is. So hopefully if the guys took it the right way, you know, they'll learn a lot from this loss.
I'm really hoping so. And I mean, it's hard to get upset because you look at the results down the line, Earl, and they normally pull it together and they're a dangerous team in March. It's just nice if you play these top games while ESPN and the world is watching that you win one. Yeah. I mean, they haven't won any of them. Yeah. I can't think of the last time they won one of these games.
Yeah, that is tough. I was trying to think of the same thing.
If it's just about the show, I mean, I love Tom Izzo to death, but, I mean, you guys may want to go with some camouflage jerseys that says Washington Generals on the front if you're just about giving a good show. Well, you got to win these games.
Yeah, that's true. You do. You play, as Hermite would say, you play to win the game.
Right.
And so hopefully they will. Well, let's talk about a team at first which hasn't won as many games as we thought they were in the first half of the season, and that's been the football team. How disappointed are you in the football team, or are you surprised at all that they've lost so many close games?
I'm very surprised. I really thought this team got over that hump of losing the close games, and I thought that this team knows how to win close games, but I think it's not the program. It was the team last year of the seniors. I think as time goes on, we start to see a little bit more and appreciate those guys a little more and more. This team, I mean, it's a heartbreaker after heartbreaker, which kind of sets me back to, I believe it was 2009 when Cousins first took the helm, and they were losing close games just like this. You hope that it pays off dividends, but, you know, I'm disappointed. I think along with the entire Spartan Nation that's got to be disappointed, because no one thought you would be sitting here saying you have to win out the rest of the season to be eligible for the Gator Bowl. The Gator Bowl was never in the vocabulary of most Michigan State fans. It was Rose Bowl, or maybe playing in, you know, another BCS game, but... I mean, right now, State fans will be lucky to get an invitation to go down to Jacksonville and play in the Gator Bowl. And they still have to beat Northwestern. They still got to beat Minnesota, which aren't two gimme games.
Right. Those games are definitely going to be tough, that's for sure. You know, when I look at Minnesota won last week, so I said, boy, so we're in for a dogfight in these last two games. I just think that maybe this team just isn't as good as we thought they were, at least as I thought they were at the beginning of the year, or thought they were going to be.
Well, see, it's the way they've lost, Earl, makes it a catch-22, because then you look and you say, I mean, you could point to one play in every game and say, yeah, hey, if this play goes different. I mean, Nebraska, yeah, you know what? I'm sure the common quote is, win more games. I mean, score more points and you win the game. I'm not going to go to the referees' excuses, but it was a bad call on Darqueze Dennard.
It was.
It was a flat-out bad call. Dennard got held on that play. If anything, it was offensive pass interference, which would have pushed Nebraska back 15 yards, and then it would have made that final touchdown more challenging for them to score. So, I mean, they're in each. I mean, Ohio State, the referee blows the play dead. You know,
yep.
Curtis Drummond picks up the fumble and is running back for a short touchdown. They blew it dead in order to say, oops, it was a fumble. My bad. So a lot of questionable things have happened. I think the team is good enough. But, I mean, Andrew Maxwell, don't think he's as comfortable as being the quarterback. It's easy to say you're the leader. It's a different thing when you go out there and show you're the leader. And he is yet. I thought he may have turned the corner at the end of the Wisconsin game. But he has to go out there, and if he sees something that the offensive coordinator doesn't see, he has to be able to change it and live with the consequences. And he did that in the final play of Wisconsin. But it still seems like he's yet to become his own man.
Yes, that's one thing I've learned, Rico, and that, you know, these guys, as much as they talk and as much as we hear them talk and coaches talk about practice and how good they perform in practice, it compares into what, you know, they have to do on game day. They have to win the games and perform well on game day. They can perform well in practice all they want, and that's good for practice, but that doesn't lead to the games.
Yep, it does. And, I mean, you become a T-shirt All-American. You look great at practice,
mm-hmm.
but when you actually hit the game, no, you can't pull it out. You can't win the games. You're not making the catches. You know, Tony Lippett makes a great touchdown catch in a Nebraska game, and then he drops one that would have sealed the game pretty much at the
mm-hmm.
end.
Yeah,
when he beat the double cover, the ball hit him in the worst place possible. His hand,
mm-hmm.
he drops it.
Yep,
if he catches that pass. First down, State's able to burn more time off the clock. He doesn't. I mean, they're apparently doing things in practice, and it's just not translating well.
Right.
I don't know if that means that maybe you need to go a little deeper into your bench and see what else you have. It's worked when you went deeper in your wide receiver rotation to pull Aaron Burbridge out because he's now become probably one of your better receivers. Now, he's struggling with a lot of freshman things, learning how to block. You know, and just learning how to overcome double teams and playing against players that are just as big and as fast as him. But he's going to be a player, you know, down the line, the more he stays in there and makes plays. So on offense, I don't know, maybe some shakeups, maybe some changes, maybe just roll out a new formation that nobody's seen before. But I don't know, it's almost like they're out to try and prove us wrong to show us that this style is going to win. You know, we just got to wait and see. So. We waited, we've seen, we saw 5 losses, we saw 4 of them at home. So let's hope that they can at least pull off one more victory to become bowl eligible, 2 if possible.
Yes. You know, Rico, that's one thing that has really surprised me. If you had told me before the season, if you had told me before the season that Michigan State would lose 4 games at home, you don't own my house right now.
Okay, well, one of them would have been Boise State.
Mm-hmm.
No, you beat Boise.
Yeah.
I can even live with Ohio State. I can live with Notre Dame.
Yep.
I can even live with Nebraska. The Iowa loss, I'm still scratching my head over that one.
Yeah.
How did you lose to a god-awful Iowa team? That I don't get. I can't. I looked at the game. I rewatched it. You had the lead for 59 minutes of the game. And I don't know. I think one thing that I am noticing is this team is having a problem with finishing, especially the offense, and they keep leaving it in the hands of the defense to bail them out at the end of the games instead of just stepping up and saying, you know what, we got it. Now, they did that once this year. They did it against Boise State where they went for it on fourth down. They got the first down. And then they just killed out the clock and told the defense, we got the rest of this game. But offensively, they can't finish. It's like they just start getting scared. They're turtling. I don't know. But, yeah, I'm with you. 5 times, I couldn't see that. Yeah, I couldn't see that.
I couldn't either.
Not at all.
And I asked Tom this morning, you know, because Tom had his press conference today, and I asked Tom this morning, well, because, you know, he's always talking about how good this team practices, so I asked him basically, well, when will we see this in the game, that this team plays in the game as good as it's been playing in practice? And, you know, he hemmed and hawed a little bit about that one, but he says that they're working on it. Maybe we'll see that in the next game against Kansas tomorrow night. So he's struggling with some similar problems, you know, the team just not performing as well as they have been in practices.
Yeah, I think that theirs is a little different. I would caution most Michigan State fans, kind of like last year, don't read too much in the first two games.
Yeah.
Last year it was North Carolina and Duke. They turned their season around. They ended up being a pretty good team, share the Big Ten title, winning the Big Ten tournament, number one seed in the tournament. They lost in the Sweet 16. But their first two games, after watching their first two games, I'm sure no one thought that they would go as far as they did. That being said, I don't think that they win this game tomorrow just because you're coming off an eight-hour trip from Germany, long, you know, tired legs, your point guard has a concussion, you know, one of your backup guys who can handle a rock and Brandon Kearney has a throat infection. I just don't – it just looks like a bad mixture for them to go into Atlanta tomorrow and knock off Kansas. I hope I'm wrong. I just don't see it, but I would caution State fans not to read too much into it, because coming back and playing Kansas after just playing in Germany, I mean, it's not like they played in L.A. That was Germany. That was a long trip.
Yeah, it was.
They had to come back from, and they lost. So, you know, traveling when you lose is always extra hard, and it's an extra long trip. So, I don't know. But, yeah, Tom, I'm sure he's seeing the things in practice, and I haven't been to a practice yet, but, you know, I've seen some of the players work out over the summer. Yeah, and they look good. They look good, but when it counts, you know, I've yet to see the Derrick Nix that I saw all this past summer in that game. He looked like the old Derrick Nix, where he'll have – as many points as you'll have turnovers. He's got to fix that.
Yes, he does. That was one of the problems. They missed a lot of layups in that game, and that's really got shook Tom up as well. They missed so many layups, which he didn't expect that, of course. It's hard to, you know, you don't expect your team to miss layups, but that's what happened in that first game. They just missed too many layups.
Too many layups and turnovers, and, I mean, giving UConn credit, 14 for 17, they're hitting their first 14 shots out of 17.
Yep.
That's ridiculous. I mean, that's like going back to the 85 Villanova Wildcats in the title game. I mean, after a while, you're just like, okay, you're going to start getting cold. You're going to start missing shots. You looked up at the scoreboard, and State was down 16 points early. I mean, I give them credit for fighting back and making it competitive and you know, and taking a two-point lead late into the game, but maybe the first thing that the team needs to work on, let's not spot the other team 16 points and have to come back. Let's not have our first three possessions be turnovers. Let's go in there and do something. And I think that – and I think Tom noticed, and this is why I think that the Kansas game may be a little iffy. They play better with Trice at the point guard and move Appling to the two, allowing him to shoot the ball better, come off screens, and just do different things. Keith Appling at the one against good or great teams, it's not going to happen, and I think that may be a recipe for disaster later on in the season.
Well, that may well be, but hey, I got to let you go, Rico. It's always been a pleasure talking with you. As you know, each and every, you know, we talk from time to time. We talk more off air than we do on air. But
that's true.
Yep, that's good, Rico. Hey, it's always good to talk to you, my friend.
Anytime you need me, just give me a call.
Okay, thank you. Yep, bye-bye.
Right.
And that's Rico Beard from Fox Sports Detroit, talking sports with you. The time now, 20 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
You send your child off to war, and they join a new family. When they return home, how does that affect yours? I'm Jackie Leiden. From the front lines to the home front, when your child returns from war. Plus our weekly read of the opinion page. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for tuning in. This is Scott Pohl with the weather. Windy today, maybe a little lingering rain with a high of 46. Tonight, the low down to 29. Windy with scattered snow overnight. Mostly cloudy and maybe some morning flurries Tuesday, the high 39. Partly sunny with a high in the low 40s Wednesday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll free. 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, now let's talk about something that happened very pleasantly over the weekend. Over Saturday night, Michigan State came home on the hockey trail and beat Michigan and handled them quite handily. And let's bring in the voice of Michigan State hockey, Scott Moore. Hey, Scott, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing great today, Earl. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. It's a lot better when you're coming off a win, that's for sure. Now, after you saw Friday night and then Saturday, you know, what's going on with this team? They lose one night easily to Michigan, and then they beat them easily, like, on the next night.
It's called hockey. No, you know, there is an awful lot of parity in the CCHA. You know, anybody can beat anybody on any particular evening, and that's what we saw this weekend. I have a feeling, and I'm not sure whether Coach Anastas would agree with me or not, but I have a feeling that what we're seeing is the marks of a very young team. And the fact that they don't have the same amount of effort or the same intensity maybe every time they step on the ice. And I'm sure that the coaching staff will eventually make that point, and I'm sure they've already tried to make that point. I'm sure that they have been continuing to make that point. It's just a matter of when a young player, when the light actually goes on for him.
Yes, and that was, what did you see Saturday night that was impressed you about Michigan State's team this year?
I think the big thing that happened Saturday night was the first goal of the game coming so quickly, you know, just 34 seconds in, and it was a great play that led to the shot that led to the goal. I mean, you know, Brent Darnell has the puck. He's coming into the zone and has the presence of mind to drop a pass from the top of the right circle to Matt Berry, who then takes it right in between the rings. Nobody on him. It's just he and the goaltender, and he beats the goaltender clean. And I think, you know, any time that you can score a first or last minute goal in a period, that rattles the opponent. Especially on the first shift of the game, that really rattles an opponent. And Michigan's got some young players, too, especially in goal. They've got two freshman goalies of their own. So, you know, all of a sudden, those old thoughts are popping into your heads about, well, you know, he's a freshman. And, you know, at that point, I think they kind of set them back on their heels a little bit. And Michigan State kind of got the taste of blood in their mouth a little bit and said, all right, let's go.
Yeah, and that has to be positive once they get a lead and they feel the blood, you know, like you say, the blood in their mouth and they're ready to go. That's all positive. So what do you see, you know, what is that game actually going to lead to, do you think, for the rest of the year?
Well, you can't help but think that this is a great building point. For the team and for the coaches as far as, you know, what they look at in practice. Because it's a situation where, you know, once again, the team came out, maybe didn't have a great first period on Friday, was much better in the second period, got rewarded for it, and then in the third period, you know, everybody looks at the 7-2 game Saturday and the 5-1 game on Friday and say, wow, what a turnaround. Well, remember, that Friday game was a 2-1 game going into the third period, and if not for a bad turnover early in that third period, could have been a completely different score. So, you know, these guys, though, what we've seen over the last 3 weekends certainly is that if they don't have their best effort on Friday, they all refocus and they come out and – the last three Saturdays, Earl, have been some of the best hockey I've seen college hockey-wise.
Yes, and now would you say this team, it looks like from what you've seen in practice as well, does it look like this really is going to be a team that has a pretty good season, you know, that probably will have a winning record?
It's too early to tell right now because there's still are a lot of battles to fight in the CCHA. But I can tell you this. I like what I see talent-wise out of these guys. And when they're all firing at the top of the page, when they're all on the same page, this team can beat any team that they face. You know, even, you know, they were competitive with Minnesota at times. So, yeah, I like what I see out of them. There's plenty of talent there. And what we saw last year is that Tom Newton and Kelly Miller were able to coach up the guys, and I think that you'll see them able to coach these guys up. And will they have a winning record? Don't know. But I think they're going to be a much different team at the end of the season than they are at the beginning, and that's when you want to be peaking.
How different, or is there a big difference, as you've seen, have you seen in Tom Manassas during this being his only second year of coaching? Is he still, what's his approach, you believe?
It still is the same. I mean, you know, last year a lot of it was getting to know the guys, and this year it's getting to know the new guys. I mean, he knows what he's got on the guys that have returned from the team, but he's got so many new faces out there that they're still trying to put things together. I think they've got their lines pretty much set now, although when Ryan Keller comes back from his injury, that's going to create an opportunity, you know, for him. You know, where does he fit into that, and how do they juggle the lines once he's available to come back? So I think that as far as philosophically, nothing has changed. It is still the attack mentality. Give 100%, 100% of the time. Go with the short shifts. Get things going, and really take the game to the opponents rather than sitting back and reacting to what the opponents do. He wants to carry the action.
And that is good for sure. You like a coach that likes to make his team putting pressure on his opponent. So that's always good. So hopefully they can continue that and do even more of that.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I think you'll be able to see that as these guys. You know, one of the things that comes to mind, and you don't like to make excuses. Nobody likes to make excuses, but maybe one of the reasons for the inconsistent play on the team, I was thinking about this yesterday. You've got a bunch of kids that are brand new to this team who are used to being the best players on their teams last year. I mean, these guys were the cream of the crop on whatever team they were on, and at that level, maybe they didn't have to bring their A game every single night to be successful. And I think that this is a learning process for some of these guys that, yeah, I've got to be on top of my game every single night. So that could be some of what's going on. But I think the future looks very, very bright here. There's some good talent, some good kids, and I think eventually it's all going to come together, and hopefully that happens in time for them to make enough of an impact on the pairwise rating so that they can qualify for another spot in the NCAA tournament. That's way down the road, though.
Hey, from what you've heard thus far, how is the CCHA going to be this year?
I think the CCHA is going to be pretty competitive this year. You know, you look Miami's playing pretty well, even though they have freshman goaltenders. They were one of my question marks. That's the next team up for Michigan State. You know, they had Connor Knapp and Reichert last season as seniors, and you kind of wondered what they were going to be able to do with freshman goaltenders. Well, you know, they've got one who's injured right now, and the other one's playing pretty well. They're 6-2 overall, so they're off to a good start, better start than maybe some people might have expected. Michigan has all the offensive firepower in the world. They just got to get their goaltending figured out, and then they're going to be good. You look at Notre Dame, they seem to be like they're going to be right there in the mix at the end of things. Ferris State had a great run at the end of last season. They've won a couple of games this year. There's a lot of talent top to bottom. This may be one of the better years
in the CCHA's history, and it's going to be the last one.
Yeah, that's it, because, yeah, we're going to the Big Ten now. Next year, you know, we'll be at the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. We'll have Penn State in there. That will certainly add another dimension to Big Ten hockey, with hockey in general, just because of Penn State and they're getting it. I know they've always had good club teams, but they should have a pretty good varsity team, shouldn't they?
Well, they just knocked off Air Force 5-1 on Saturday night at home. And, you know, they've got they picked up some pretty high-profile recruits this season. They've got a real good coach, Guy Godowski. We know him from when he was at Alaska earlier in his career before he went on to Princeton. So they've got a very good coach, you know, a very talented guy there. So I think they're going to be just fine. I'm really looking forward to Big Ten hockey conference play. I think the Big Ten, with its TV contract and everything, the teams top to bottom are going to be able to make a case to the top recruits out there that they want to play in the Big Ten. They're going to be on the big stage if they're in the Big Ten. I think you're going to get even more talent to these teams than you've gotten in the past. I think Big Ten hockey conference is just going to be tremendous.
Yes, and when you look at it, and I know we've been in, you know, had to play a couple of basically Big Ten teams already with Minnesota and, of course, Michigan. Mm-hmm. Do you see the Big Ten being a bigger, a stronger, and more physical conference when they get started?
I think it's going to be. I think that everybody wants to get bigger and stronger, and again, with the exposure that these teams can promise these top recruits, I think you're going to see some pretty loaded teams in the Big Ten. On top of that, not only the television exposure, but you think about the aspect of the arenas that these games are going to be played in, these Big Ten games, are all going to have all of the amenities that Pro Scout is going to want to come and watch a kid. And so if you've got two talented teams meeting in a nice arena, an arena that has some amenities for the scouts, those scouts are going to want to go to those places to see those games. So you can tell kids as you're recruiting them, you know, not only are you going to be on TV, but you're going to be playing in front of NHL eyes every single night that you play a conference game. It's just going to be a real boon for these guys.
Yes, and with them being having the TV contract and being on there, how do you see the Big Ten going, especially since they're going to have this TV contract and all these games that they're going to be playing? They're going to be should this help recruiting?
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they put the schedule together, and that's the one thing that we haven't heard. The only thing that we've heard about it is that most likely they'll put it together similar to what they do with basketball and with football, where you play your non-conference games early in the season, and then you focus on your conference games later on in the season. So I think it'll be a lot of non-conference games through the months of October, November, and then as you get into December and certainly first of the year, that's when you'll start getting your Big Ten conference play. The question is going to be, how are they going to put these games together? Are they going to do it like we've always done in the past, like college hockey's always done, where you play a Friday-Saturday series in one location, or home and home if you can? Or are they going to split it up like they do with both men's and women's basketball to try to maximize the number of times that they can get games in there? So you may have Minnesota, Wisconsin playing on a Tuesday, Michigan State, Ohio State playing on a Thursday, somebody playing on a Saturday, somebody playing on a Sunday. You know, we don't know the answer to that yet. That hasn't been answered.
That'll be a challenge to see how they decide to do it, though.
It will be, because you know you've got all kinds of travel considerations in there. Whether you know, a situation like with Michigan State and Michigan, certainly it's easy to get together no matter where you are. Down to Columbus, it's a bus ride down there. But when you go to Penn State, you can't really bus in, play one game, and bus back out. Same thing with Penn State going to Minnesota. So there's all kinds of things that they have to consider, you know, the travel expense, and weigh that against the television exposure and the value to the Big Ten network of when the games are played.
Yes, that's for sure. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us. We're talking with Scott Moore, the voice of Michigan State Hockey, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Scott, you know, there's one thing that we've talked about, you know, year in and year out is how good can the team become, and, you know, how good is the CCHA in? And, you know, even though we've already said the CCHA should be pretty good, I know they're breaking up this year after this year, aren't they?
Yeah, CCHA won't exist anymore after this year. And so, you know, at the conference level, they're making a big deal about it. They're trying to get together as many players who have won a CCHA tournament championship, the Mason Cup winners. They're trying to get as many of them together as possible, find out where these guys are. There's some neat initiatives going on for the end of the season for the postseason tournament. And then the landscape will change, and it's going to be exciting to see what happens. As far as the CCHA teams, Notre Dame has already decided they're going to join Hockey East. And that one kind of drew a chuckle for me, because when they mentioned it, they said, well, you know, all of our teams play in the Big East except for football, so it makes sense for us to join Hockey East. And then all of their teams are going away from the Big East now. But the hockey team will be in Hockey East, and they'll be heading out to the East Coast to play all their road games and all that. Miami and Western are joining the new conference, the National Collegiate Hockey Conference. So they'll be in a conference along with Colorado College, Denver, North Dakota, Minnesota, Duluth, St. Cloud State. You know, so that's going to be a pretty good conference. Exactly. And then the other teams from the CCHA, the Bowling Greens, Ferris, Lake Superior, Alaska, Northern, they are merging with the other teams from the existing WCHA for a new WCHA. And that's going to be an interesting conference, because you're going to have, except for Bowling Green, you're going to have teams that play Division two or three in everything except hockey. They all play up to Division one in hockey, and play in a lower division in other sports. So I think that's going to be a very competitive conference right there. So it's going to be an interesting landscape in college hockey now.
Yes, it's going to be radically different coming up next year.
And you know, with the Big Ten having a 20-game regular season as opposed to the 28-game regular season that the CCHA has, that means that Michigan State's going to have four additional weekends of non-conference play where they can maintain rivalries with the Ferrises and the Lake Superiors and the Western Michigans and the Bowling Greens. So there's going to be plenty of chances for those traditional rivals to still see each other on a regular basis.
Yes. Hey, Scott, I want to thank you for joining me. It's always a pleasure talking about hockey with you, my friend.
Earl, if I can get in one quick shameless plug.
Sure you can.
We have the Tom and Asta show tonight, yep, over at Reno's East, 7 to 8 p.m. Would love to have people come out. Not only will we have Coach Anastas and freshman goaltender Jake Hildebrand there, will be talking on the phone with Enrico Blasi, the head coach at Miami, and soccer coach Damon Rensing is going to join us as well to talk about his team's draw in the NCAA tournament.
Well, that sounds good. Hopefully a lot of people who are listening to us now will show up over there at Reno's East.
Come on out. We're going to have a good time tonight.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Scott.
You got it, Earl. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And that's Scott Moore talking hockey with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. 40 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Hurricane Sandy served as the latest lethal reminder. Many of the places we most want to live are also the most dangerous. I'm Jackie Leiden. Why we risk it to live where we want. Plus, The Who's Pete Townsend joins us and takes your calls. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Windy today with a high of 46 degrees. Tonight, scattered snow and windy with an overnight low down to 29. It'll be mostly sunny Tuesday, and there could still be some flurries in the morning tomorrow, the high 39. and partly sunny on Wednesday with a high in the low 40s. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. And, of course, we're going to talk some more sports with you right here on AM 870. We're going to be talking a little bit of boxing. Haven't talked any boxing in a while. We're going to bring in a good friend, Bob Every. But first, I've got to tell you, if you want to win tickets to the Michigan State's last football game, give us a call at 884-4870. That's 884-4870 for tickets. If you want to give yourself a chance to win tickets to that Michigan State Northwestern game coming up on Saturday. And also a basketball game coming up on Sunday, give us a call for that as well, 884-4870. So if you want to win football tickets or basketball tickets, call us up here at WKAR. Let's bring our next guest, Bob Every, and talk a little bit of boxing with Bob. Hey, Bob, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, I am doing wonderful. How you doing?
Hey, doing great. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I know we haven't talked to each other in a while, so we just got to catch up a little bit. As you know, like I was telling you, my good friend Seth Mitchell is fighting this Saturday on HBO, and a lot of the Spartan fans should be staying up for that one because he's fighting a guy you know a lot better than I know him, even though I've judged a couple of his fights, Jonathan Banks. This should be a very good test for Seth and a good battle for Jonathan Banks. They're two guys who are trying to move up in the heavyweight division.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right, Earl, and I apologize if you got any noise in the background, but I'm at Mancino's having lunch with my buddy Jeff Kegler. So they got a nice machine going on here. But anyway, it looks like it's going to be a nice bout. I think they match up well together against one another, and absolutely a huge stepping stone for either fighter. So I would think that the person that wins this fight is most likely going to get a shot at the title.
Yes, I would say they'll definitely put themselves in a good position, that's for sure. Hopefully it would face one of the Klitschko's, and they're young enough, so that would be a good, interesting fight if Golden Boy decides, hey, it's time now to get them, or unless they want to try to wait even longer for him to get even older.
Well, that's exactly right. Of course, we want our Spartan to win, we want to win that match. But, one thing for sure, Klitschko probably won't be as strong as he has in the past without Emmanuel Stewart in his corner. As you know, Emmanuel passed on, and they're actually going to have the memorial for Emmanuel tomorrow in Detroit. And, what a hard hit that was. Emmanuel and I go back a long ways, as you know, and he's going to be sorely missed by boxing. I mean, he was really one of the classy guys in boxing.
Oh, no doubt about that. He always was. I had a pleasure of talking with him on several occasions. And yes, he loves boxing. And he loves boxing in Detroit. I mean, he made boxing in Detroit basically what it was.
Exactly right. You know, when you think of the names that are synonymous with boxing in the Motor City, it's not Joe Louis, it's not Sugar Ray Robinson. I really believe it's Emmanuel Stewart. I mean, what he cultivated over there, that little crock Heat Box Recreation Center on the middle of Detroit there, and all the world champions that he developed, it is unbelievable. And then, of course, people started to see that this guy's into something. And then he was a trainer for hire. All of the top fighters in the world wanted this guy in their corner because they felt that they gave him a better opportunity to win the bout. And then, they all came to Detroit, trained out of the Kronk, and it was just, when you went down there, you either sank or swam, and there was no middle ground. Either you survived or you didn't survive, but he was a tremendous individual, loved kids, gave a lot back to the community, and no matter how popular he was and how many big shows that he did, he always would show up with these little grassroots shows, as you know. I mean, the Marshall Street Army shows that we would have, the Thanksgiving yes. shows. He would always come up, bring kids up there. So, I mean, just a great guy.
Yes, and that's the thing, Bob, as you know and I know, he loved the kids so much. I mean, he really loved the amateur. I think he loved the amateur program far more than he loved the pros.
Well, you know, that was the purest form of boxing, I believe. And, you know, he got his start there, of course. He was a 119 national champion in 1963. And I remember the first night that I met him, man. You know, I was competing in the 1967 State AU Boxing Championships at Cobo Hall. And I had just beat a guy for the championship by the name of Gary Davis. And as I was getting ready to go back to the dressing room to take a shower and clean up, Manuel came up and introduced himself, and he says, he gave me one of the most profound compliments I've ever had in boxing. And he says, Bob, he says, you've got one of the nicest right hands I've ever seen. And, he reiterated that a couple of times, you know, down the road when we would get together and stuff. He always said, man, I loved your right hand. And, that just made me, fill up with pride. And man, it was just he was that way. He always had something nice to say to somebody, you know, and seemed to know when somebody needed something nice said to them. And he was a tremendous individual, and he was a Detroit City icon. And I don't know how you replace him. I really don't.
Yes. Now, what do you think he would say about Saturday's fight between his man Banks and Seth Mitchell?
Well, as you know, he was always kind for the opponents too. I mean, even though he didn't have them and he might be competing, he never said anything bad about anybody. I mean, from the articulate standpoint, he would dissect a person and say, he does this, this, and this, and we'll have the strength against this thing and this thing and this thing. As you know, he was in Kenny Gould's corner when we brought when Jackie Kalin and Emmanuel brought Kenny Gould up to fight Roger Turner, and Roger really took Kenny Gould apart and won that bout on regional national television, Madison Square Garden television. And prior to that fight taking place, it was really big for the state of Michigan, and it was getting a lot of play. In all the press conferences that we had, Emmanuel would never say anything bad. You know, he never fueled anybody's fire by trying to put him down or saying something negative. He always said positive things about the guys that fought his guy. And I guess he just figured, it'll be settled in the ring. And he told me one time one of the most disappointing things that ever happened to him in the ring was when Tommy Hearns lost that close fight to Sugar Ray Leonard. He actually felt, as I did, that Tommy Hearns won that bout and kind of got screwed there.
Yeah, I thought he won it too. I mean, he knocked Sugar Ray down two times, and he still didn't get the decision. He should have gotten the decision, but, that's boxing. We have those kind of strange decisions from time to time. I've often wondered, Bob, is there any way to correct, if there is a bad decision, is there any way to correct it?
Well, it's hard to say. Boxing, it's set up to be such a subjective sport in itself. And as long as, there are decisions and people have to decide, by watching a fight go the distance who they think won, there's always going to be that, that difference of opinion between human beings. But I'm not really quite sure what it is. I mean, do you have more people involved? Right now, as you know, we have three judges doing the voting or two judges and a referee. But, do you double that? I mean, what do? I suppose the more people you have, the better shot that you have of getting it right. And then, depending on the promoters involved, whether it's at a neutral site or a boxer's hometown site, they have boxing commissions, and generally speaking, people that get assigned to those fights are local people that really know the local fighter better. And do they subconsciously lean that way a little more than they would lean the other way? It's hard to say, but I don't know if there's a system out there that would be foolproof. I'm sure we'd be using it.
Yep. Hey, Bob, we got a caller for you with a question. Let's go to the phones. We've got Don on the line. Don, how you doing?
Hey, Real Guttural, how you doing? Even though I'm not a huge boxing fan anymore, for many reasons, I enjoy hearing you talk about it. And I agree. Here's to Emmanuel Stewart, who, the early 80s with the welterweights was one of boxing's golden eras, as was the 70s with the heavyweights. And, you know, just Emmanuel Stewart was quite the name. The Croc, Jim, Milton McCrory, Tommy Hearns, and all those guys. It was a pretty exciting time. Bob, I go way back. I moved to DeWitt in 1964 when I was 9 years old. And correct me if my memory is faulty, but I remember back in the day, back when there was a big Golden Gloves program, you being part of that. And correct me if I'm wrong here, was a rival of yours, a local rival, although he may just be a name that was out there at the same time, Al Fracker?
Well, Al Fracker, I never fought Al. Al was always a little heavier than me and a little bit younger, but he boxed out down by Jackson, Michigan Center, and he was a nice fighter. Al was a nice tough kid. He kind of was out of the same mold as that Danny Kerrigan, who fought out of Nashville. Just big tough kids, and the harder you came at them, the harder they fought you back. But back in the days when I fought in the Golden Gloves back in the '60s and early '70s, that really was the biggest indoor event going on in the mid-Michigan area outside of an occasional big Michigan State basketball game that there was. And
I remember those Golden Glove cards back at the Civic Center. It was a great time for boxing. And for both you guys, what happened to the Golden Gloves, in that regard, amateur boxing? And, part of what has made, boxing just so meaningless to follow, it seems like everybody's got a championship belt of some sort. What led to, you used to have, like, two divisions, the WBA and the WBC, and you actually had a top 10 fighters in the weight classes, and there just seemed to be a lot more order to it. What led to that, and is there any hope of ever getting back to a more centralized deal?
Well, it's like you said, it was a little simpler back when they had the eight divisions. Now they've got the whole alphabet soup division. The way it has been set up over the years has kind of made people lose interest. I think as far as the amateurs go, amateur boxing is and always has been a very demanding sport. And, there's so much more things for kids to do these days that you just don't see the dedication in those areas that you saw before. So, I don't know exactly what caused the downfall of some of this stuff, but, maybe it's cyclical. Maybe it'll come around again someday. I don't know what year that will be, but it's a tough sport, and I don't see it going any place for sure. But the popularity has waned a little bit, but maybe someday it'll come back.
Well, let's hope so. Last question for you: do you guys really think Seth Mitchell has got what it takes to be a heavyweight champion? And are there any other up-and-coming heavyweights out there that, casual fans should be interested in? Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You got that. You know Seth pretty well, I think, so.
Yeah, I think Seth's got a very good chance to be champion. I mean, he starts out, Bob, with a good base. He's got a great jab, and he uses the jab, and he's learned very strongly to go to the body. He's, as you know, not that many heavyweights, especially, they're good body punchers. But Seth is a very good body puncher, so he's got a good jab. He knows how to go to the body, and that serves him very well, which gives him a good chance, basically against any fighter.
Yeah, I like Seth Mitchell. I've watched him on a couple occasions, and I've listened to him speak on a couple more occasions. And he's a very articulate young man. Obviously, he has a college background, and he is a Spartan. So he played football, has athletic ability, and I think that always helps you when you're in a sport like boxing. The more athletic you can be, the better chance that you have. Still, you got to be able to take it on the beak, and you got to be able to give it. But I think he's the type of guy, out of all those football players, and you've seen tons of them that have come through the tubes here that have tried their hand in boxing. He certainly has been one of the more successful that I can recall. I mean, he's certainly more successful than Ed Too Tall Jones or, Mark Gastineau and some of those other guys. I think Seth is a real fighter and does have a shot at winning a world title if everything falls into place correctly.
Yes, and he's very tough, and which we like to say a lot of, like a lot of fighters, he's tough. And more importantly, Bob, he loves to train. I mean, he has no problem going out and training every day. He was telling me that he loves the training and the training regime. He says because he knows it's all on him. He said, unlike a team, I talked with him about team sport and individual sports, and he realized that, hey, if he wants to be successful as an individual, he's got to train. And as we've seen over the years, a lot of guys don't like to train that much, and that hurts them in their boxing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I've had the pleasure of working with a lot of guys. Murray Sutherland was a tremendous trainer. Roger Turner probably was one of the hardest trainers I've ever seen, and really could count on Roger to do everything he had to do in order to be in the best shape. Joe Lipsey wasn't necessarily a good trainer when he came to Lansing, but he learned how to train very, very hard and became a very dedicated person towards training. But you're absolutely right. You know, hard training is one of the key components to confidence. And you have to have confidence when you're in a sport like boxing. And any doubt at all in your mind in the middle of a round when somebody's banging you on the head, it can make you lie down or find a place to lie down in a hurry. So training is certainly paramount if you're going to be a fighter.
Oh, no doubt about it, Bob. And especially with Seth, he's got a good, as we've seen, he's got a good right hand, and he's learned to get in trouble and fight his way out of it. That's one thing that a lot of boxers, if you haven't been in trouble and then you get in trouble, boy, you better learn how to fight your way out of it. And Seth has had that, and he's learned how to fight out of trouble once you get in trouble.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, Harold, before I forget here, I want to remind everybody, if they have somebody that they think belongs in the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame, our deadline for submitting nominations are December 1st. Anybody that can get a nomination form to me by December the 1st will be considered for the induction ceremony in 2013. I believe that our induction ceremony this year is on August the 25th. Excuse me, July 25th, not August, July 25th. So, if anybody out there is listening that you've got somebody that you think belongs in the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame, please go online to our webpage, which is LansingSportsHallOfFame.org, LansingSportsHallOfFame.org. All the information they would need to follow up on getting that selection in would be right there.
And, Bob, that Sports Hall of Fame has really grown since you moved over to the Lansing Center. How big has this thing got? I mean, I'm just surprised at how big it's grown in such a short time.
Well, let me tell you what we've done. We've gone from no sponsorship, which means $0, which is really a concern for us, to $35,000 in sponsorship money right now, which is more than what we need to annually run the Hall of Fame. That's to buy the plaques, that's to put on the awards banquet, and do the necessary work that we need to keep that looking visitor-friendly at the Lansing Center. You know, Tom Snyder from Applegate, Kelly Dean from Dean Trailways and Auto Owners, and then of course our good friend Magic Johnson kicked in that $20,000 for five straight years. We couldn't be happier with those sponsors. We love them. They're all local people that have a vested interest in this city and understand the value of having a sports heritage continue, so we can continue to produce people like Jordan Weaver right here in our own community.
Hey, Bob, I want to thank you for being with me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And, hey, I look forward to talking to you again in the near future, buddy.
All right, Earl, you take care. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. And that's Bob Every talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. I want to thank you all for listening today, and thank you the ones who called us as well. And we want you to come back and join us tomorrow and give us a call. right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR, Michigan State University Radio. So come back and join us tomorrow right here. You know, we come your way Monday through Friday. We're going to be talking sports with you. Tomorrow, we're going to have as our guest, Carlton Valentine will be as our guest, and Scott Walton will be as our guest right here on AM 870. So thank you all for listening. Thank you all. And we'll see you tomorrow right here on WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.